But at the end of the day, you have protected that very important concept of justice, which meant a lot for Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Right, and just as a final note to our dear listeners, because it is very spread throughout the Muslim community, unfortunately, that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he was a caliph for 5 years, and he waged 3 wars. You're saying he's so warlike, he's mm-hmm. so aggressive. And no, in reality, all of these conflicts, they were caused by injustice in the society. They were not only offensive wars, but no, defensive wars
all
for Islam.
All defensive.
Right.
And even at the words of the Prophet, according to some research, defensive all
wars
of them
only.
Were defensive.
Yeah. Yes, and with that, we will end today's program because we are out of time. I thank the dear Sheikh for joining us today and for shedding light on this very important historical event. And I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. Until next time, fi amanillah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Japanese researchers have developed chopsticks that artificially create the taste of salt. They have done this as part of efforts to reduce high levels of sodium intake in Japan. The utensils look like a typical pair of chopsticks, but with a cable and a mini computer worn on the person's wrist. A mild electrical current transmits sodium ions from food through the chopsticks and into the user's mouth. This enhances the taste of salt, requiring less of it in food to achieve the same good taste.
To prevent severe lifestyle-related diseases or to prevent these diseases altogether, we need to reduce the amount of salt we take regularly. Japanese people tend to ingest a large amount of salt in their diet. If we try to avoid taking less salt in a conventional way, we would need to endure cutting out our favorite foods from our diet or endure eating bland food.
The chopsticks have already been clinically tested. Participants say the device enhanced salty taste of low-sodium food by roughly 1.5 times. The engineers are currently refining the chopsticks and hope to commercialize the product next year. The product was jointly developed by Meiji University professor Homei Miyashita and a beverage holding company. Miyashita is best known for his creation of a TV screen that can imitate various flavors. How long could you work at your job? In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Othman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Othman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Othman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity. Iran's National Museum is displaying a collection of artifacts that was stolen decades ago but has finally returned home after a long legal battle. The items, which include sacred figurines, pots and jars, date back to more than 3,000 years ago. They were stolen and sent to the West more than four decades ago. In 1991, the British Museum was seeking to buy the collection from a smuggler residing in Switzerland. The objects, however, were seized by Swiss police and revealed in court in 2008. Since then, Iran had been trying to get the stolen treasures back home.
Under pressure from the Iranian diplomatic apparatus and the official complaints of the National Museum in 2015, the legal process continued and finally on December 20, 2020, the collection returned to us.
The collection belongs to the northwestern city of Bukhan, which was the home of Manians around the 10th to 7th centuries BC. The Manians were one of the first nomadic tribes to build cities in that area. The director of Iran's National Museum says the effort to recover other stolen artifacts continues. The country is now holding talks with the US and Australia to return ancient objects smuggled over there. Agriculture is no exception when it comes to adapting new technologies in the context of changing climate. Now, French farmers in the northwestern suburbs of Paris grow greens in any season using hydroponic farms. Residents of a housing estate have ditched the traditional way of farming to create jobs for their community. Hydroponic farming is a method of growing plants in water, not in soil. It may sound like it would be a complicated process, but it's actually quite straightforward. The system is made of plastic and uses a rich organic ecosystem. The workers use less water than usual and do not even need a teaspoon of soil. One of the employees describes how they turn barren land into a farm.
It used to be a garage where they stored cars, but since there were no more cars, we used it as a dormitory. We listened to music and watched football matches. We used to meet here to have a bit of privacy and breathe, to hide away for a while. But now that it's become a place of work, I'm happy because I'm working.
Hydroponic farms can be used to grow products of all kinds in any region. In this one, farmers are planting all sorts of things, ranging from Peruvian mint to Vietnamese coriander. They hope that the system can be used to help local residents, especially those who need it the most.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Magic returns to Belgium with a purple carpet of bluebells covering the undergrowth of Hallerbos woods near Brussels. Each spring, this beech forest turns into a bluebell spectacular, turning the area into a natural wonderland. Millions of these blooming flowers sprout up across the 550-hectare woods, filling the air with their sweet aroma. The short but enchanting blooming phase offers nature enthusiasts a one-of-a-kind experience.
It is an outstanding and magical place because whenever we come, there's an amazing atmosphere. The sunrise was truly beautiful this morning, and we know this offers the opportunity to take great photos and decorate our house. It is a great comfort during these tough times.
Visitors can stroll the winding paths and watch rabbits and deer wandering through the woods. The forest floor blooms for a period of 7 to 10 days. After this time, leaves begin to grow on the trees above them, blocking the sunlight from reaching the flowers. The phenomenon of bluebell forest is not uncommon in Europe, but the Hallerbos greenery is unique for the density and beauty of its blossoms. A huge pink moon has glowed over Chilean skies, mesmerizing stargazers and ordinary citizens alike. The full moon was completely visible over the capital, Santiago. The celestial phenomenon is called a pink moon as it appears in April and is named after an American plant, pink plot, that blooms in spring. The pink moon will shine during the weekend through early Monday and may be visible in most parts of the world. The phenomenon also marks the calendar for different religious festivities around the globe.
A batch of autonomous delivery vehicles has been provided to facilitate personnel and volunteers in the streets and communities of Shanghai. The self-driving vehicles distribute supplies to residents in the Chinese megacity, which is now hit hard by the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The vehicles reduce person-to-person contact and largely lower the risk of infection. A community served by the distribution station has more than 30 apartment buildings and nearly 3,000 residents. The weight of each order is more than 5 kilograms, which puts great pressure on the volunteers to deliver. 49 autonomous delivery vehicles have been sent to communities, colleges, and hospitals in Shanghai to support anti-pandemic and supply work. Sunny skies and spring temperatures made for the perfect setting for the 65th birthday of Fatu, the world's oldest gorilla living at Berlin Zoo. At this age, the Western Lowland gorilla is what Berlin Zoo calls almost something of a legend. Gorillas living in the wild have a life expectancy of about 40 years, and at 65, she has been the world's oldest living gorilla for a while. 65 is absolutely extraordinary, and that obviously needs to be celebrated in style.
They mainly get vegetables, and the sugar they receive at most is fruit sugar, and that's what she saw for today in the shape of raspberries and blueberries. They were the decoration on rice cake made of boiled rice, a thin layer of rice and some curd so it sticks together. The bottom was made of a lot of green stuff, then the lion and lettuce.
According to Berlin Zoo, Western Lowland gorillas are now an endangered species after their natural habitat was continuously decimated, and therefore fewer and fewer animals live in the tropical rainforest of Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo. World of Opera is opening its doors to the deaf community for the very first time. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra has teamed up with the Deaf West Theater to stage a production of Beethoven's only opera, Fidelio, at their home at the Walt Disney Hall. The chorus will be performed by the White Hands Choir, a group from Venezuela consisting of disabled children and young adults who sing as well as sign. The production pairs up a singer and a deaf actor to both inhabit the one role on stage. Having deaf actors perform alongside opera singers, however, has its challenges, not least of which is keeping up the rhythm of the music.
I think probably that there's a lot of tempo that I've been rehearsing. A lot of times when the singers hold the same word, but the next time they say that exact same word in the next few bars, they don't hold it as long. So trying to remember all of those is very difficult. So are they holding this for 4 beats or 2 beats? Or what word is this in this thing?
I feel like the challenge with opera is that it's very fluid and it's not repetitive. The tempos change throughout it, and night to night it even changes. The conductor, you know, kind of changes how he conducts things each night, and so that is something that is challenging.
The opera singers also give small cues to the actors, like opening a letter or sitting down or standing up, to keep them informed where they are in the piece. The deaf cast use theatrical ASL, or American Sign Language, in the production. DJ Kurs, the producer at the Deaf West Theater, says the performance is a little bit more poetic and a little bit more kind of picturesque.
A startup in the U.S. state of California is turning science fiction into reality by sending tiny robots on a fantastic voyage inside humans to treat brain disorders. The smart cells are small enough to be injected and can be carefully guided through the brain using magnetic coils placed outside of the patient's skull. The coils are linked to a computer that can remotely maneuver the robots through delicate pathways into the affected part of the brain. The micro-robots are also removed by rewinding them through the same route. The developers at Bionaut Labs say these robots are extremely important when it comes to zero-failure-sensitive surgeries.
For localized conditions such as cancer tumors, stroke, atherosclerotic plaque buildup, localized pain, and many other conditions, there is a real need to have a micro-robotic, precise, remote-controlled mechanism that can treat a condition only at a specific point and nowhere else.
The startup has already tested the robots on large animals. Inventors hope to use the robot to pierce fluid-filled cysts within the brain when clinical trials on humans begin in 2 years. If approved, they could offer key advantages over more invasive and dangerous treatments for brain disorders.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Dear listeners, hello everyone. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition, we will try to have a closer look at the 25th chapter, Surah Al-Furqan. First, let's just listen to the verses we're going to talk about in this program, and we'll be back shortly. So stay with us.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَلَقَدْ صَرَّفْنَاهُ بَيْنَهُمْ لِيَذَّكَّرُوا فَأَبَى أَكْثَرُ النَّاسِ إِلَّا كُفُورًا
And we have certainly distributed it among them that they might be reminded. But most of the people refuse except disbelief.
Brothers and sisters, we have reached the 50th verse of chapter Furqan. وَلَقَدْ صَرَّفْنَاهُ بَيْنَهُمْ لِيَذَّكَّرُوا فَأَبَى أَكْثَرُ النَّاسِ إِلَّا كُفُورًا And indeed, we have distributed amongst them so that they may remember. But most of mankind are averse save ingratitude. This verse, dear listeners, is talking about the importance of remembrance of divine blessings. The Almighty Allah talks about remembrance of His blessings, and the true meaning of remembrance of divine blessing is to express gratitude for them, and negligence of them is to express ingratitude and rejection for them. So, in this noble verse, Allah refers to Holy Quran and says, وَلَقَدْ صَرَّفْنَاهُ بَيْنَهُمْ And indeed we have distributed amongst them. Although many of commentators, such as the late Tabarsi and Shaykh Tusi, and also Allama Tabatabai in Al-Mizan, have said that the pronoun of the word صَرَّفْنَاهُ is referring to rain, and that in this case, its concept is that Allah sends drops of rain in various directions and places and divides them among people for the sake of remembrance of this great blessing of Allah. But I assume it's right to say that this pronoun can also refer to Holy Quran and its different verses, because this kind of structure past tense and then present continuous tense, is used 10 times in the Holy Quran, and 9 of them explicitly refer to the verses of the Holy Quran. So when it says, وَلَقَدْ صَرَّفْنَاهُ بَيْنَهُمْ, and indeed we have distributed amongst them, the word, the pronoun who can refer to the drops of rain mentioned in the previous verses, also the word, the Holy Quran. But when it continues and says, لِيَذَّكَّرُوا, so that they may remember Allah, and also, فَأَبَى أَكْثَرُ النَّاسِ إِلَّا كُفُورًا, but most of mankind are averse, save ingratitude, it somehow goes with the fact that we can mention the pronoun referring to Quran more. And also, in many cases, the Quranic phrase لِيَذَّكَّرُوا, that they may remember, is placed before them, and so it seems impossible that only in this verse, this phrase has got a different meaning.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا
The context context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
Basically, the Arabic word tasrif, that the word sarrafnahu is coming from, means to change and transform. This word is not very consistent with sending down rainwater, but it is more consistent with the verses of the Holy Quran, which are presented in various forms, sometimes in forms of promise, sometimes in forms of threat, sometimes in forms of punishment, sometimes in different other forms like prohibition or enjoinment, or sometimes even in the form of story of ancient people. So this word goes with the meaning of Quran more. Two more points regarding this verse, dear listeners. The first is that the word sarrafna means to change and transform. So we can infer that if we want to remind people of something, we have to have different kinds of remembrance. It must be with different forms, and it must be with repetition, as the word sarrafna suggests. Also, the fact that the Holy Quran mentions فَأَبَى أَكْثَرُ النَّاسِ إِلَّا كُفُورًا is really correct, because most of the people do not show gratitude to the blessings of Allah, either because they are not aware of their existence, or the fact that they do not want to be in the right path. But for any of these reasons it might be, the true people that are showing gratitude are not that a lot. Because if they are truly showing their remembrance of the divine blessings, they have to express gratitudes for the blessings that the Almighty Allah has sent for them, to use those blessings in His path, and not to use them in the path that He has prohibited. So they have to practically remember the divine blessings of Allah, and to remember practically means to be grateful of them in different aspects of the life. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode of the program. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
In this night of destiny, which is better than 1,000 months, dear Lord, we beseech you to shape our destiny in the most excellent manner.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today, I want to continue on in our reflections of this blessed month of Ramadan, and more so preparing for the light nights of Qadr. So what can we do on the nights of Qadr? I'm not going to give you the whole list, but just a few pointers. You know, one of them is obviously excessive supplications, dua. And I don't want to limit only to what's found in the books or on duas.org or online or the app. But take time on the Laylatul Qadr nights to speak to God in your own language, whether it be English or Gujarati or Urdu or whatever language you speak. Speak to God in that language. Yes, use dua iftitah and dua tawbah and dua makarimul akhlaq, no doubt. But speak to God in what you know. Don't rely on a formula given by the imams or the prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam. Reuse those, but then also talk to God in what you know, in what you want, in what you're looking for in your next year. Seek repentance, istighfar, and turn back to Allah. Tawbah is important because we commit sins, unfortunately. Sometimes we do them intentionally, other times unintentionally. But use the time on the nights of Qadr, allot a portion of time specifically to tawbah. And maybe make it more personal by asking or trying to recollect your sins. And then ask God for those particular sins that you've done and that you don't repeat them again. Number three is to recite the Noble Quran, obviously, if you can take time to read a bit of the Quran, think about what you're reading, contemplate on the content. And you know, because we're not in the centers, we may have a bit more time at home to engage with these acts of worship to Allah. We're not pressed by a program organizer having to schedule prayers at certain intervals, and we can't keep up to them. Unfortunately, we have this mentality in our community. We have a bucket list of things to do that we have to complete the entire book of du'as. And it's beautiful to read du'as, don't get me wrong. But when we get into this routine of making it a list, like a shopping list, which I'll talk about briefly later. But that becomes the problem because we're not having the spirit of Ramadan and the spirit of submission and the spirit of asking for forgiveness. It just becomes a routine that's on the PowerPoint that we have to get done to get to the end of the night. And there are many other recommended acts of worship. I didn't talk about it, but charity, obviously. Sadaqah during the night. Because the rewards are magnified. Laylatul Qadri khayrun min alfi shahr. It's better than 1,000 months. So maybe charity is better than 1,000 months of giving charity. So try and make it a point that if you can, give whatever you can on these nights. Make it a point before the Laylatul Qadr a'mal begin. On the 19th, 21st, 23rd, keep going and give even a little bit every day. If you have, let's just say, $1,000 to give, give $300 a day or give some portion every day. And encourage your family, encourage your children, even if they're 6, 7, 8 years old, encourage them. They may have an allowance Maybe they have money that they get from the government. Maybe you have given them some money in Ramadan as a gift. Encourage them. And even if they give $1 or $2 or whatever our children can give, encourage them from a young age to help and think of the needy and the less fortunate and those who are suffering. And plus being the Laylatul Qadr, they will also get the rewards. Allah will not, you know, reduce their reward because they're young. God won't say, well, they're only a five-year-old, so we'll get a portion of the thawab. No, they'll get a full reward. And as a mother and father, you'll also get rewarded for encouragement to do good, right? Don't we read that in Surah Al-Asr? That all of humanity is at a loss. إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَأَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ وَتَوَاصُوا بِالْحَقِّ وَتَوَاصُوا بِالصَّبْرِ. You're encouraging somebody to good. So encourage your children, your spouse, family members to give in these nights of Qadr, brothers and sisters. And also, as we say here, seek knowledge. Try and get some knowledge in Laylatul Qadr. Pick up a book maybe on Islam, hadith or tafsir or aqaid or akhlaq or some topic, and read even a few pages. And try and change your level of education. As a reminder, that duas.org has all of the duas you need in Arabic, in translation, in transliteration, in MP3. And so if you don't have access to any of the books of supplications, then please make it a point to go to duas.org. Subhanaka 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 ya You know, I talked about this bucket list or this checklists, and unfortunately we do this as we've been brought up on this routine where we have a list of du'as that's on the PowerPoint, and every time we do one, the program organizer or the AV team check it off. We did this du'a, we did this du'a, we did that surah, Rum and Dukhan and Ankabut, and we go through and check things off as if we're going shopping. And I get it, why we do it. But I don't understand why we continue to do it when we recognize that it's not a matter of quantity, brothers and sisters. I remember being in a community once where between Maghrib and Fajr, we only had about 3 or 4 hours of time. And I had people come to me and say, Sheikh, what are we going to do in the month of Ramadan this year? And I replied, well, we'll do what we've done every year. We'll fast, we'll break our fast, we'll eat, we'll pray du'as, we'll sleep, we'll wake up for suhoor. You know, repeat 30 days in a row. And they're like, no, but what about Laylatul Qadr nights? I'm like, we'll pray to God on Laylatul Qadr nights. What's the problem? And they said, no, you don't understand. You know, between the time we finish Maghrib and Iftar, it's 11 p.m. and Suhoor is 3 a.m. We only have 4 hours. How will we finish everything on this list? We have Dua Iftata, we have Dua Toba, we have Makarmul Akhlaq, we have Joshin Kabir, we have the Quran A'mal, we have all of this. How are we going to do it all in 4 hours or 3 hours? And my response is, that's not the goal of Ramadan, brothers and sisters. And if you're looking to get to the end of a list to complete it, we're missing out on the beauty of Ramadan, really. Because it's not a competition of how much you can recite in the shortest amount of time. It's about the quality. Are you truly asking God for forgiveness? Am I truly asking God for forgiveness in that 2 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours or 5 hour window? And even if I could do just one istighfar, astaghfirullah rabbi wa atubu ilayh, and then Fajr comes, but I did that sincerely from the heart and I really meant it, isn't that better than 1,000 istighfars which I'm just doing to get it over with? Something to think about, brothers and sisters. And we ask Allah to accept our acts of worship that we have performed so far and to give us the goodness of this world and the goodness of the world to come. And we ask Allah to give forgiveness to all of those who have left this world, from our community, our family, our friends, the ulama, the shuhada. And we ask Allah to join them all with Muhammad and Ali Muhammad, alayhi wa alayhim wa salatu wa salam.
Dear listeners of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, you can follow this program entitled Minbar every day in the month of Ramadan. If you have any suggestion, you can send us your email at englishradio@irib.ir.
Love is everywhere, so much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of the Quran, I feel it inside me, strengthening my iman. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan.
Whenever people talk about the war in Ukraine, they tend to focus on what's happening inside Ukraine. You know, the battles taking place in Mariupol, the Donbass, or the outskirts of Kiev. But that's just half the story. The war in Ukraine is really a catalyst. It's pushing the world towards a multipolar order. Now, right this moment, we are seeing a global realignment. And I don't just mean the shifting of alliances. We're talking about the future of energy sales, global supply chains, the redistribution of power from the concentrated hands of a few in the West towards Asia. This is a seismic shift, both in size and nature, that could very well determine the future of international politics for the next decade. Now, if I told you 2 months ago that EU member states would be paying for their gas in rubles, you would never have believed me. And yet here we are, where the dominance of the US dollar, of the euro, are being challenged. And while the Western press want you to believe that the whole world is united and has the exact same position on Russia, it couldn't be further from the truth. So maybe it really is time to take a hard look at what the so-called international community really means and where it's headed. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. The United States of America has been the global superpower during the 21st century up until this point, and for the better part of the last century. And one of the things that the U.S. derives much of its power from is its currency, the U.S. dollar. So toward the end of World War II in 1944, you had the Bretton Woods system that was put in place, pegging the U.S. dollar to the gold standard. And as a result, the U.S. dollar de facto became the global reserve currency. And that lasted for a few decades, right? And then from 1968 to 1973, that system fell apart. And what emerged soon thereafter in its place was the petrodollar. The United States, in secret, made an agreement with Saudi Arabia, right? They told the Saudis, we'll give you weapons, we'll give you security. And in exchange, the Saudis would conduct all oil sales in U.S. dollars and buy up U.S. bonds. 80% of all oil transactions are conducted in U.S. dollars. Around 55% of global reserves are in U.S. dollars. But now, because of the war in Ukraine, that could very well change. We've had several shocking developments in the last week that you would have never imagined before, right? So because of the war in Ukraine, the U.S., the EU, they have slapped Russia with sanctions to the point that Russia is now the most sanctioned country on earth with well over 5,530 sanctions. The EU sanctioned everything except Russian energy imports, because the EU relies on Russia, right? About 40% of their gas comes from Russia. However, the UK, the US, they went ahead and straight up banned Russian energy imports. And even though the US isn't a major importer of Russian oil, that announcement of, oh, we're thinking about banning Russian oil, and then actually banning Russian oil, this caused gas prices and oil prices to skyrocket. Oil went up to around $135 a barrel. That's the highest we've seen since July 2008. Gas prices also went up dramatically, Dutch and British. And now all of a sudden, the US is panicking because the US is a net importer of oil. So their oil bill is going way up. And so in order to drive the price back down, the Americans are trying several things, right? First of all, they called up the Saudis and the Emiratis and asked them, please produce more oil. We need to calm global prices. But turns out Mohammed bin Salman, the Saudi crown prince, he won't even take Joe Biden's phone call. You know, apparently they're unhappy because the United States isn't giving them enough support to kill more Yemenis. Then the United States sent a delegation to Venezuela. Remember, Venezuela sits on the world's largest reserves of oil. And the U.S. used to be one of their top customers, you know, until Bush, Obama, Trump sanctioned them into oblivion. Now, what's funny here is that for years we've been hearing from the U.S. and their allies that Nicolas Maduro is not the president of Venezuela. Apparently, the president is some guy that no one's ever heard of in Venezuela called Juan Guaido. But now, all of a sudden, when the Americans need oil, oh, now they recognize who's the real president, and they're sending a delegation to beg for oil. And again, who are they talking to? Who's the decision maker? Well, I can tell you it's not Juan Guaido, because they went to speak to none other than Maduro. Now, if the Americans are begging Venezuela for oil and begging Maduro for oil, you know the situation is dire. And on top of that, the Americans have tried other ways to bring down oil prices, right? So all of a sudden, after dragging their feet for well over a year, all of a sudden the US wants to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal. Wow. So remember, the idea is that they lift sanctions on Iran. Iran can put its oil back on the global market, and then oil prices go down because the supply is increased. Well, that didn't happen because of multiple reasons. Russia demanded a written guarantee that Iran won't be hit with fresh sanctions for maintaining ties with Russia. However, it's also been reported there are additional details that had to be ironed out, the terrorism designations and so on. The point is, this sudden enthusiasm and this rush from the Americans to finish up the deal, it really shows their desperation. And the United States have basically sanctioned so many people, they've sanctioned everyone, that they've backed themselves into a corner. And who has the upper hand now? Russia, Iran, Venezuela. Let me tell you, that is quite the twist, right? You're really seeing the tables turn right before you. And to make matters worse for Washington, Saudi Arabia not only refused to take their calls, but was even contemplating selling oil to China, not in US dollars, but in yuan, in China's currency, the renminbi. So basically saying, bye-bye, petrodollar. Remember, the entire premise behind the greenback's value is that major oil sales, energy sales, are denominated in US dollars. Now, China imported roughly 17% of its oil from Saudi Arabia in 2021, so this is no joke. At the same time, instead of sanctioning Russia like everybody else, New Delhi struck a deal with Moscow for 3 million barrels of crude. Now, the amount is irrelevant because India consumes more than that in a single day. But the fact that India traded with Russia, continued to maintain ties with Russia, bought this oil at a discount and in rupees, rubles, so dealing another blow to the US dollar. So China refuses to sanction Russia. India and Pakistan refuse to sanction Russia. They're continuing to buy gas and oil like normal, right? Despite the threats to India that it will also face sanctions. That doesn't sound very isolating, right? That's roughly 40% of the world's population there, refusing to toe the Western narrative, refusing to toe the Western line, I should say. And never mind all the other countries that have also refused to condemn Russia. Just look at this map of who has sanctioned Russia. It's basically EU member states, North America, and Japan. And Australia. So in other words, it's the global north, right? This is where all the world's wealth is hoarded. And you know, all the countries that have not sanctioned Russia are mostly countries you would consider the global south, right? So there's an interesting pattern right there. Western governments and media, they keep saying the international community is united against Russia. I'm sorry, that's not what it looks like. The West is not the international community, it's the West. Or the global north, if you want to use the new terms, right? So as a matter of fact, It goes further than that. Let's look at these two UN votes. On March 2nd, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution condemning Russia. The overwhelming majority of countries did vote to condemn Russia. That's undeniable. But if you look at who abstained, we have Iran, Iraq, China, India, Pakistan, South Africa. Again, that is enormous. That's well over a third of the world's population, you know, above 40%. We're nearing half the world's population. And so later on March 24th, another General Assembly resolution and pretty much the same result. And 2 days before that, on March 22nd, you had a meeting in Moscow between the Russian foreign minister and who? The ambassadors of all the emerging economic powers, the BRICS, right? So you've got the ambassadors of Brazil, India, China, South Africa, meeting in Moscow with Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister. Again, that doesn't really look very isolating to me, does it? So you've got the two most populous countries on Earth, two nuclear powers, meeting in Russia's capital with Lavrov. I bet you didn't hear about that on the BBC. Now, Lavrov actually made his first visit to China since the war began, just a week later on March 30th. Right? Soon thereafter, Lavrov actually visited India on April 1st. And now, India has received many visits, many official visits in the past week. You've had officials from the UK, from Greece, Austria, Mexico, they've all come to India. But the only one that India's Prime Minister Modi met with was Lavrov. And again, that pretty much tells you everything you need to know. But this war in Ukraine hasn't been without its setbacks, right? When we talk about a global realignment, that goes both ways. And so we've seen the European Union openly arming Ukraine. That's unprecedented. Germany, the same thing, right? Germany has broken with its past, with its stated stance of neutrality. And Germany's going even further. It's rearming. And I think this is something that not a lot of people really grasp. They don't understand how serious this is, that Germany is rearming. That never ends up well. The last time Germany rearmed, we had a Second World War, we had the Holocaust, we had 30 million dead in Europe alone. And now Germany is basically doing what Donald Trump wanted it to do, what NATO wanted it to do, which is increase their defense spending from 1.5 to 2% of their GDP. So Germany's announced 100 billion euros for its military. That's more than Russia. This is incredible, and it could have very, very severe repercussions down the road. Now, as soon as the war started, Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan went to Moscow. He not only met with Putin, he also bought 2 million tons of gas and wheat. He refused to condemn Russia at the UN. He refused to sanction Putin. And the Americans took offense to that, right? Because they want countries they can control. And so soon thereafter, Imran Khan unveiled a plot by the United States to oust him, to unseat him from power. Lo and behold, here we are, and Imran Khan has just been ousted via a vote of no confidence. And like all Pakistani prime ministers before him, he didn't get to complete his five-year term. The Americans are like the mafia, they don't forget, and they punished Imran Khan for daring to conduct an independent foreign policy. And that's the grim reality, right? That shifting towards a multipolar world doesn't come without a price, and the American empire will kick and scream and take down as many with it as it can. To punish Russia, we've seen many corporations pulling out, from McDonald's to Instagram, you name it. And among those are credit card giants Visa and MasterCard, which is actually not that smart when you think about it, because what they've basically done is they handed their market share in Russia to China, right? Because as soon as they left, China's UnionPay came into Russia and linked up with Russia's payment system, MIR, M-I-R. And to make things even more interesting, while all this was happening, Iran and Venezuela started talks to link their payment systems to Russia's MIR. So, you know, further enlarging the cooperation, the international cooperation between these countries, further enhancing the economic ties between the axis of resistance, between the global south. So the West attempts to crush Russia's financial system, you know, by freezing roughly half of the Russian central bank's foreign assets. They haven't entirely succeeded, because as a matter of fact, if you look right now at the value of the Russian ruble, it's regained a lot of its value. It's almost back to pre-war levels at 80 rubles to the dollar. And of course, there are people who say, well, this is just artificial, it's just temporary. Yeah, but it's still astounding. You know, Russian President Vladimir Putin told the Russian Central Bank, and he told Gazprom, the state-owned gas company, to come up with a plan by March 31st to make sure that all gas payments from unfriendly countries be conducted in rubles, not euros or dollars. And again, this is a monumental shift because, as we were saying, most oil and energy transactions are denominated in US dollars. Actually, most of Russia's gas sales to Europe are in euros. And so when Putin says unfriendly countries, he's talking mostly about the EU, the US, Japan, Norway, the countries that sanctioned Russia. And that alone helped shore up the value of the ruble, as European countries, which again, collectively, they get 40% of their gas from Russia. So, you know, they have no choice. They have to go now to Gazprom Bank and open an account in rubles, where their euros will be taken, they'll be sold for rubles in their name at the Moscow Stock Exchange, and then pay for the gas, then also used to pay for the gas in their name. So not only does that drive up the demand for rubles, but it's also smart because it means European buyers are now opening accounts at a Russian bank and not the other way around. So this further insulates both the money itself by keeping it in Russia and Gazprom Bank from potential sanctions in the future. And Joe Biden, the US president, he made clear that there will be food shortages as a result of the conflict. Benchmark gas prices have gone through the roof. People in the US are paying $4 a gallon now. And yes, there was already an energy and fuel crisis before the war. But the Americans and the Europeans have essentially taken a bad situation and made it three times worse. Don't go anywhere. We'll continue breaking down the shift to a multipolar world right after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
So as we were looking at the other week in Yemen, when the price of fuel goes up, everything goes up because fuel is one of the most important commodities and affects everything from healthcare to public transport to groceries. Now, earlier I spoke to Scott Ritter about his take on things. Scott is a former intelligence officer in the US Marine Corps. He also served as a United Nations weapons inspector and offers formidable insight, not just in combat-related matters, but international affairs and what it means exactly, you know, transitioning to a multipolar world.
The war in Ukraine is a cleansing moment, and that I don't mean that in a good way. You know, it's like let's say you have a forest that's full of trees that are infected with fungus and insects and all that, and then you have a forest fire come through and burn it all down. That's not necessarily a good thing, except that what emerges in the aftermath of that fire is a viable forest with healthy trees that'll grow better and produce, you know, have a better impact on the environment. What existed prior was just a festering cesspool of infection. The world today is a festering cesspool of infection because of the United States, because of the our efforts to impose unilateral hegemony over the world. Ukraine, you know, you can't make the transition from that to what Russia and China are seeking to do without a forest fire. And Ukraine is that forest fire. And it's sad for the Ukrainian people. It's sad for the world. But I think that, for instance, Russia's economic addiction to the West is being broken because of this. The impetus necessary to get Russia to make the strategic pivot away from the West to China and Eurasia is only happening because of this. The liberation of the Russian government from the economic infection of Western influence and the role played by the oligarchs. This is a cleansing moment. There is going to be a radical realignment of.